I'm Alana Roche.
And I'm Dr. Lauren Costine. And welcome to The Consciousness Salon.
The Consciousness Salon is a conversation where I, community activist Alana, meets with psychologist Dr. Lauren to explore current and historical issues in order to disrupt current paradigms and offer restorative tools and practices.
We will be discussing issues ranging from gender parity, misogyny, shadow work, microaggressions, looking at our internalized conscious or unconscious racism. And at the end of the day, how all of this affects how we feel about ourselves and others, and so much more.
Hey, Lauren.
Hey, Lana.
How you doing?
I'm really good. How are you?
I'm good. I feel like so much has happened. So much has happened, and yet, I don't know. You know, we've been kind of chit-chatting about today's episode, and it's really just gotten me thinking about and kind of reflecting over the last couple months. And I have to tell y'all, I'm so excited to share with you a little bit about where we've decided that we're going to share a little bit about their story and really focus on transphobia. I know it's a topic that is really concerning to the two of us, right?
Yeah, very much.
Yeah.
And not the easiest topic to always talk about because it's not well known outside of our community, right? It's well known by allies and things, but it's not really, there's a lot of people that are not really paying attention to this issue.
Do you think a lot of people are that's what I see. I think a lot of folks are unconsciously transphobic.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Do you think they're identifying like, oh, wow, I'm actually transphobic? You think people are doing that?
I think some people are.
Okay.
Yeah. The people that are really interested and in doing this inner work, this kind of inner work and this kind of activism, external activism, like fighting for disenfranchised groups, rights and safety and things, and also looking at their own component or piece in it, you know, and becoming aware of that and becoming a more evolved person. Yes. That group. And I think that's a large part of our audience.
That makes a lot of sense.
Right.
That makes absolute sense.
Right. Yeah. Good. So, and
then versus the ones who are not activists.
Not activists.
Who are just punching in and punching out.
Yeah.
And there's still a lot of stuff there. And they're probably having a hard time wrapping their minds around trans community in general.
Yes.
Not to mention their phobia.
Right. Right. And what we'll get into a little bit later, which is, you know, what is cisgender and what is transgender and, you know, all of those kind of things. Because there's actually a term now for people who identify with the gender they're assigned at birth. It's called cisgender. And I bet there's a lot of folks out there that don't even know that term.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I mean, I'm in the community and I think I learned it a few years ago.
Mm.
So, and I might have learned it from a straight man, actually, which is really profound in itself.
That is. Wow. Yeah,
a straight cisgender man. I also know for a fact that he has a feminist sister.
Okay.
So he's still plugged in.
Okay. That's awesome.
But yeah, it's true. If you're not actively engaged in these circles, it's really hard to stay. But I do feel like the cisgender term has become more popular and more widely used. And so
100%.
So I'm glad that we're taking the time today to really kind of focus in on the transphobia topic, because I'm hoping that everyone will have some tools, some language, be able to have a dialogue with themselves.
Yes.
Not to mention anyone else.
That's right.
Just yourself.
And awareness. Just becoming more aware. And, you know, a lot of this awareness work is, like we've talked about before, just repetitive, you know, just kind of reminders, because it's easy to slip back into just kind of old thought patterns or beliefs or what have you, because it's so much conditioning goes on so early on in life. And these are not, you know, easy things to get out of.
Right. I mean, and I'm proud of us. Like, we are being super conscious and taking the steps to update our files.
That's right.
Yes. This is definitely not something that was presented to us when we were in grade school.
No.
Far from it.
No, far from it.
Unlike youth today, this is all integrated as part of their awareness.
Yeah, so I think so, a lot of it is, you know,
we have a learning curve is my point.
We have the learning curve, and folks from our generations have the learning
yes.
curve. Maybe the younger folks, and by the time they're in their, you know, midlife and, you know, later into adult, you know, into their adulthood and thriving in their adulthood, they won't be needing to learn about this
right.
in the way that we do. But I know that that's, you know, our audience, right, is, you know, our age groups from like 30 and on.
Yeah.
And this,
it's exactly it.
There was no learning about this when we were younger.
Yeah.
I mean,
we're catching up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot.
So, yeah, we really wanted to talk about transphobia, and we wanted to highlight a particular individual by the name of Beth Elliott, and really highlight her story, but also not go into too much detail about her entire story, but really focus in on the transphobic experiences that she had to deal with.
Yes.
And how that experience also translates to transphobia within the lesbian community.
Well, that's because specifically that's what we're going to be talking about and highlighting today, is what we've learned through our research about what happened to her in the lesbian community. And as an out trans lesbian and
powerful
activist.
Yep. Feminist.
Yeah. Feminist.
Yeah. So do you want to share with our listeners a little bit about Beth Elliott?
Just yes, I would love to.
A little tidbit.
And this is interesting because some of the things that I'm going to be talking about right now, we haven't gotten into too much yet, like the Daughters of Bilitis and who they were and what they were. So if you're listening and this sounds, you know, interesting to you, that's a whole other segment at one point. And that's a very fascinating organization, important organization that helped with, you know, lesbian rights when in a time you could lose your job if you were out. That was in the 1950s. But anyway, this part of her story. So I'm going to get back to that. We've already said she's an American trans lesbian folk singer and writer who was born in 1950, and she was out. She was very
She's an
out.
Artist.
And an artist.
Yeah.
And out in the 1970s when it wasn't even called transgender yet. It was still called transsexual.
Sexual. Yeah.
Right? And that identity. And I mean, this is from what I'm reading, has to be extremely courageous woman. Like, courageous. Okay. So one of the main facts that we really want to highlight today to lead into our discussion is she was known for being a part of this organization that was in San Francisco called the Daughters of Bilitis, which was a lesbian rights activist.
And let's spell Bilitis.
Oh yeah, because it's a really, and people say it in different ways. I used to say Bilitis, and then I was told it was Bilitis, so I'm saying Bilitis now.
I think Bilitis is correct.
Yeah, it's B-I-L-I-T-I-S, so it's all I's. And
in case you want to dive into that,
right? Which is we totally recommend it. Yes, it's an amazing. It was started by a couple named Phyllis Lyon and Del Martin. And what's really important about them is they started this organization because they just couldn't find. There was no community. It was in San Francisco in the 1950s. It had to be super secretive. It started in their living room. And then they were the first couple that was married by Gavin Newsom when California quickly allowed same-sex marriage before it was shut down by Prop 8 and then reopened with...
So cool.
Yeah. When it was marriage equality for the land. So that's a really important... We'll get into that. But anyway, So she's an out trans lesbian in this group, and she even becomes the vice president. Like, you know, she's grooving in there. And then there was a woman in there who was a what's called a lesbian separatist, and we'll get a little bit into that, who started saying that she didn't belong there. And that trans women were not women and they were dangerous men and all this stuff. And so there ended up being a vote around whether she could stay or not. And she was voted out anonymously, 35-28. And so imagine that horrific situation, because she was a part of it and you know, really bringing this important trans piece.
And depending on how you're looking at that, I mean, 35-28.
It's close.
Yeah, I mean, I see it as close.
So do
for
I.
The 70s, for all that unawareness.
I find that very close, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, there was 28 women in that group that wanted her to stay.
That's powerful.
Powerful.
That speaks a lot to her character.
Yeah. I agree. I appreciate you saying that. Thank you. So right after that, this was 1972, she then helped create this conference called the West Coast Lesbian Conference. And that was the largest conference at the time for lesbians that had ever been created. So they created it here. I'm pretty sure it was in LA. And so the first night she was on stage, and it doesn't say exactly what she was doing on stage. I don't know if she was playing her folk music
right,
or what.
As a performing artist
right.
or a keynote speaker. We're
right.
not sure.
It's not sure, but she was met with this hostility again. And there started to be some protests about her being there. Anti-trans lesbians were protesting her being there. Now, there were some very strong lesbians, cisgender lesbians that stood up to her that actually have been a big part of Los Angeles, Jean Cordova and Robin Tyler, and they stood up for her. And so they stopped this conference and had a vote. So another vote.
Right. At a conference.
About whether she could stay or not. Now, 2/3 voted and allowed her to stay. So that was great. She finished her performance, apparently, and then left. And then the next day, there was an anti-trans lesbian separatist woman that spoke very begrudgingly about her and said horrible things about her. And I think you're going to get into that a little bit, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it really speaks to the mentality of the transphobia of that time. And, you know, I think we can see a lot of relevance of that. I believe the woman's name is Robin Morgan, who was actually a member of the West Coast Lesbian Conference. According to Susan Stryker's book called Transgender History, Robin Morgan said, "He is an opportunist, infiltrator, and a destroyer with the mentality of a rapist."
Right. I mean, that's just insanely gaslighting, inflammatory, horrific language to use.
Well said, Lauren. Yeah.
Like, oh, my God.
Yeah, all of those things.
Like, you know, and this is a woman.
Not to mention completely what's the word? Not acknowledging, there's a better word, the gender.
Right.
By
going to the male pronoun.
Using the male pronoun. Exactly.
Right. You know, as
disregarding.
Another gaslighting.
Right.
And offensive way to treat somebody.
Offensive.
I mean,
absolutely.
Hostility and this hatred, which we're going to get a little bit into, right? About like, what is going on here?
What is going on here? Seriously, yeah. I mean, here we are in this story. The reason why we were really, we wanted to kind of emphasize and highlight Beth's story is because it addresses and touches on a few things, right? It touches on, clearly it's an example of an oppressed people who then in turn oppresses another.
Right. And that's good. Well, that's something that we want to keep getting into
ongoingly, right?
That
exactly.
This is a severe problem.
In humanity.
Throughout the world. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's endemic.
Yeah.
And it's systemic. And it's totally not understood well enough.
It's a reoccurring problem.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Everywhere you look.
When you really, because we, you and I have been really looking at this. We're looking at this in like every little nook and cranny that you could think of. And we're realizing that this is everywhere.
Yeah.
Like people are just oppressing people everywhere. And even if you've been oppressed, you don't look at that and you also then oppress.
You become the oppressor.
Yeah.
So that was one of the examples that came out of this story. Also, the invisible transphobia, right? Which is something we want to acknowledge today. How there's like this level of invisible transphobia within the lesbian community.
Yeah, huge. Huge. Yeah. And it's, you know, look, and we're not here. I mean, I think this is really important. I know you and I are both coming from a very compassionate place, and we want to keep coming from that compassionate place while raising awareness and trying to, you know, help everyone become more awake. But, so it's not like, oh, let's just now attack this group for being horrible to this group, you know what I mean, or being unaware or being unconscious around privilege. But at the same time, like, it's really our responsibility, whatever kind of privilege you end up having, to be aware of it and then not be unwittingly using it against others, and just or not being aware of the advantages that you have.
We are utilizing our cisgender privilege,
bingo,
to talk about this in a way where it is affirmative, right?
Yes, yes.
We are allies. I am really okay with telling the world that I am an ally of the trans community, and I think it's absolutely necessary to call out transphobia when and whenever we can.
All the time.
So
absolutely.
If it is occurring, which it is, there's no doubt about it, it is real and it is prevalent and it exists within the lesbian community, then I feel it is my responsibility as a cisgender woman to call it out and call attention to it. It doesn't mean I'm attacking anyone.
Right.
I'm just calling attention to it.
Exactly. And I think that's just an important distinction, because what I think I have found as an activist all these years, whenever I'm calling attention to any sort of privilege, the person who has the privilege can often feel, you know,
triggered,
or attacked, and there's always this kind of defensiveness.
Not of course, always, I mean, it comes with
the fragility.
It's the fragility that's getting defensive.
Yeah.
So
feeling like you're doing something wrong when you feel like, you know, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not mean to anybody.
Right.
You know what I mean? Where it's like, well, okay, but there are ways in which the invisibility of the transphobia within the lesbian community, which isn't at the level of the hostility that we're talking about Beth Elliott experienced in those two, you know, really big events she went through. But the invisibility is a problem because there's a lot of cisgender privilege within our community. And then that lack of awareness around that leads to transphobia.
Yes, well said.
That's really invisible.
Yes.
It's not like they're going out and doing what these separatists are doing.
Right.
But there's like a lack of awareness around what members of our community are going through.
Right.
And how hard it is for them.
Right.
And how we have found, as being part of the community, our rights would not have changed and our circumstances have not gotten as far as they have without our straight allies. So our trans sisters and trans brothers and everyone within the non-binary community, they need the allies within the community.
And we owe it to them.
Yeah.
Because they have always been on the front lines of change.
Yeah.
They've always, of whether it's Marsha Johnson, etc., have stepped in and led that change, we definitely owe it to our trans community to do our part. And we felt called to do this today.
And it's so important because, you know, the bottom line is we're so much stronger together.
Absolutely.
And when we're really an awake group of people, we're unstoppable.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, you know, we thought it would be good opportunity to kind of talk about some of our cisgender privilege real quick. Just to kind of, we came across this article written by a trans man, and we would like to share with you the title of the article is 11 Cisgender Privileges You Didn't Know You Had.
Yeah, it's such a good one.
So we're just gonna should we name all of them?
Yeah, we could just name them. I mean, this the resource. I mean, the link to this article will be on our
site. It will be posted on the link, or on our episode.
Yes.
So number one is bathroom safety. Number two, freedom of passing.
What does that mean, Alana?
Passing comes up quite often. Where, lack of a better word, people do not see you as trans.
That's right.
They see who, regardless, if I met someone, the idea was that, I had no idea that you transitioned. You passed as if you were born this way, quote unquote, right?
Right.
I hope I'm not.
Yeah.
I hope I'm saying that.
I think you are.
Without, you know, offending. Forgive me if I'm, you know, misspeaking. But that is a conversation that comes up often within the trans community. And there's actually a lot of, from what I understand, challenges with that as well. Some want to be passing and at the same time
don't want to be like them become invisible.
Elitist or, in a way, or superior or privileged. Due to passing.
Right.
Anyhow.
The layers of complexity are massive.
Seriously. Yes. But, you know, I actually use the term passing quite often in racial terms.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know, in terms of like how people are white passing, they can pass as white when they are not, in fact, culturally or ethnically of European descent, quote unquote, Eastern or Northern European descent. So,
wow, okay.
Yeah, so I love this term passing because it really, it can apply in various contexts of all the things we love talking about, but in this particular one, it's like the freedom of passing, where your identity and your gender identity is not questioned.
Well, and
I think that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like for me, you know, being a white, cisgender, femme, lesbian.
Right.
I pass hardcore.
Right.
You know, in a lot of
ways. All the privileges there.
Like I walk in and there's a lot of ways.
You pass as a straight woman.
And then that
triggers you.
That does trigger me because then there's a whole other set of problems. And then I have to sit there and think like, is it safe to come out right now? You know, I do. I really have to think about that. Or even something a little bit more around my own fragility. Do I feel like dealing with a negative reaction right now? Am I in a resilient enough place?
Yep.
To deal with someone's or whatever it's going to be, or you know, just dismiss it. Just even something that's more nuanced.
Right.
Right.
But assessing your capacity.
Assessing my capacity
going out the door.
Before going out the
which
door,
which the trans community, I'm sure, can relate to in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Do they have the capacity today?
That day.
Today.
Yeah.
To deal with whatever they will be confronted with.
Accounting. Even if it's just looks.
Right. Well, let me get to that.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
So the rest
please.
Of the list is your boundaries are by and large respected. That's a cisgender privilege.
And what do they mean by that? I think we could quickly get into that. In meaning that what I have heard from my transgender sister and brothers, is that some people feel like they have the right to ask really personal questions around their bodies, basically. Like,
seriously.
Like, something that you would never ask a cisgender person. Some people feel that it's okay
entitled,
to do that. Entitled.
Totally.
To do that. And I think that's what that
it's infuriating. And our community is guilty.
Oh, yeah.
The LGBT community somehow, because they're like, oh, we're all on this rainbow. We're family. It's okay. You're safe with me. Still completely inappropriate.
Yeah. Right. It is. It's inappropriate. It's like, think about if there's ever a question, think about how you would feel if you were asked. And if you're the kind of person that doesn't care what anybody asks you, just you put your compassion and empathy hat on.
Please.
For the love of... really important.
Yeah.
And just...
take a minute. Ask yourself that question.
Be discerning.
Yeah.
And say, like, yeah, you know what? Since I'm not exactly sure...
yeah.
If this is okay or not... let's just err on the side of caution.
That's it. That's it. That's it. If you have to stop and question, if there's a pause, don't do it. Just don't do it.
Just don't do it.
Just spare all of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. Let's move forward. So also we have your name isn't questioned. Mm-hmm. What else? You are generally safe in sex segregated spaces.
And that's a big part of what we're talking about here, because here she Beth Elliott, is in these lesbian spaces or women only spaces for the most part.
Where these female feminist spaces.
Feminists. These are feminists.
Right. This is what's so mind blowing.
And enraging. And it's like, and then they're not safe.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
she was not safe.
Right.
Yeah. So that's really important, because that's one of the things that we love about being lesbians, is we can go into our, you know, same gender spaces and feel really safe, right?
It's special.
Yeah.
Yes. I get it. We have your ID won't cause you trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Your driver's license. Any form of ID.
Yeah, I've never, ever, ever had to think about, like, oh, my ID may not be congruent with how I'm presenting. I mean, that is not an issue that I have to worry about ever.
Correct.
My ID aligns with me at the, you know, and it always has. So that's a privilege.
Totally.
Yeah.
You get to see yourself represented everywhere.
Yes.
Yep. Since the beginning of time. You don't have to face potential transphobia when making friends.
Yeah.
That's really intense.
It's really intense because you have to, like, come out with this part of yourself eventually. And then, like we were just saying, just do you have the, you know, and how resilient are you that day to deal with making new friends and having to deal with possible negative reactions to who you are.
It's so interesting because I'm thinking about that and comparing it to just like the challenges of, well, anyway, I was just saying, like, people of color.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost harder because the people of color, it's like if people have issues with people of color, they can see it, you know, it's on the skin.
Yeah.
The people can navigate and divert.
Right.
And go take, you know what I mean? If they're racist, they're like, I'm out, you know? They
right.
can take, they can make a left. But with the trans community, you know, it ends up coming up in conversation.
Yeah.
Right. So at some point, you know, so.
That makes so much sense. Yeah.
I was just thinking about the differences.
Yeah. Because it's not going to really be talked about in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then murder, harassment, and physical harm.
Yes.
Which we know is, I mean, it says here, despite strides for trans visibility in 2015, the year also recorded the most murders of trans people on record.
And particularly for trans women of color. Yeah. And I know that's still ongoing. I mean,
ongoing.
That's like right now, this year.
Not slowing down, sadly. Your body parts
aren't
forced to be front and center when dating.
Yeah. That's a huge one because, yeah.
And last but not least, it's easier for you to financially support yourself. I'm going to quickly say this. It says, according to GLAAD, trans folks are 4 times more likely to be unemployed than cis people. And due to this, face homelessness more frequently.
Yeah. So I've, you know, in the 16 plus years I've been working in this community, I've heard so many stories of when they do transition and say they're married, they lose their partner, they lose their family, they lose their job, they lose everything. I mean, literally everything, and have to start over, and like really scary stuff.
Just to be
stability stuff.
Just to be you. Just to be authentically you.
Live your authentic self.
I feel like I need to take a deep breath for this.
I know, it's such a good point.
So
that's a really good resource for anyone that's interested in looking that up, educating yourself a little bit more. It's a good article, and it will also lead you to, there's other articles on all of this that's really important to just...
And feel free to reach out to Lauren or I, you know, we're
on
here.
On our email, which is...
Yeah. DrLaurenAlana@gmail.com.
Yay! Yes.
So, yeah, feel free to send us an email if you have any questions or concerns, you have a situation, you have a friend, anything. This is about creating a supported space.
And a space with resources and tools. And, you know, so if you are one of our cisgender friends and you're new to learning about this, also feel free to reach out to us. And if you're one of those that really does want to have that kind of sensitivity training, that's also at your hands on what I like to call Dr. Google, or reaching out to us or other resources.
I'm obsessed with sensitivity trainings.
Yes, it's just incredibly, incredibly, incredibly important.
We have a lot of resources, so please, please, please reach out if you have any questions. So I'm going to quickly just jump into... I'm going to just say it, TERFs.
Oh, yes. That's a really important component to talk about right now, too. And, you know, that there's an acronym that actually describes, you know, transphobic lesbians.
Well, it's transphobic lesbians, exactly. And TERFs actually stands for Trans Exclusionary Radical Feminists.
Yes. And that was named by...
Viv Smith, or Smythe.
Yeah.
I might be pronouncing it incorrectly. I apologize. Also named as TIGTOG. She is a pro-trans feminist, just to be clear, this woman, who coined the term in 2008. So she clearly wanted to make sure that her position was not being linked to this other group.
Right. She wanted to... define who this other group was so that people could understand more what was going on within actually the feminist movement.
Right.
This like, you know, anti-trans group, sometimes lesbian separatists, sometimes feminist separatists.
But regardless.
And then once there was sort of an acronym, a way to describe them, then you could really say, okay, they're TERFs. We have to be careful of them or what have you. You know,
because they say radical feminists, not lesbian or...
Right, radical feminists, yes.
It's regardless of sexual orientation.
I remember I tried, there's a couple things. I tried to join a radical feminist group on Facebook once, very innocently. I was like, oh, that looks interesting. I was kind of doing some exploring years ago. And I got back this really long message that was a TERF message. And, you know, I didn't know about that, the TERFs yet. And I read this message, like, you have to be, you can't be supportive of trans women, and you have to be a, you know, woman, blah, blah, blah. And of course, I didn't respond. I just moved on. I was like, oh, my God, this is crazy.
It's real.
It's real, and it's really crazy. Like, really, and to my opinion, it's insane. So that, and then we actually had to deal with it at the Dyke March this year.
We did.
So that's such a, it was sort of an important thing that happened, was we found out that a TERF woman was going to possibly be coming to the Dyke March with a sign apparently we heard she would be alone, but she was going to have a big sign, an anti-trans sign, at the Dark March to make her presence known. And you and I are on the Lesbian and Gay Advisory Board, and we had worked on this program, the Dyke March program, right? And we actually had a trans lesbian activist as one of our speakers. And so we actually immediately, when that was, you found out through one of your friends, right, that we instigated, we let the city staff know of West Hollywood.
Absolutely. We took all precaution.
They let the sheriffs know. They let the fire department know. So one of the things...
How beautiful was that to feel so supported by our city in a moment like that?
It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I mean, everyone was on alert.
Yeah.
We were on alert. And then, I don't know if that's the reason, what happened? This woman didn't even show up.
Right.
But we were ready.
Energetically.
Yeah. Who knows, right?
Yeah. We set the precedent that this is going to be a loving space. A loving, respectful, inclusive space.
Right. And that if you decide to do that, there obviously there's free speech and we can't make
you
leave.
Of course.
But everyone's on high alert.
Yeah. Yeah.
Setting the tone. Yeah. So important.
Leading by example.
Yeah.
It's a lot of, you know, part of leadership.
And I know last year there were TERFs that attacked some
other cities.
Others, like in San Francisco, there was a huge, horrible thing that happened. So it's very real. So I'm glad we were prepared. And I think the more that we're aware of all of this, then the more prepared we can always be when we're in those kind of spaces.
Absolutely. Yes. Oh my goodness. I think that's
what we wanted to cover.
Yeah, I think it's time.
I think the most important thing is to know, and we're going to get more into this, you know, is... You know, the oppressed can often be oppressors. We need to be so aware of our own biases and our own unconscious phobias that we may be projecting onto others unwittingly. We must be very aware of our own privileges. This is how we're going to be a part of making the world a better place.
Yeah. It's part of the healing.
It's part of the healing. It's
healing ourselves and indirectly healing our society.
Yeah, exactly.
So good. I mean, it's good in the sense that if you are interested in growth, right, if you have a growth mindset, that this episode is really allowing you, if this is all new to you, hopefully this is, you know, helping you just update your files and open up a whole other world to development, right? And evolution.
Bingo. And if it's not new to you, then as we know, repetition is incredibly important because we are so involved in our busy, busy lives. But we want to be constantly reminded of these things that we need to be.
Of our humanity.
Yeah, of our humanity.
For humanity, we have to be reminded of our own humanity in order to help humanity.
Yeah.
So, awesome. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you, Elena.
Thank you for joining us.
We love you and stay in touch. And please go to iTunes and click likes and
subscribe.
And then if you could possibly leave a review, that really, really helps us get more ranks so more listeners can find out about us. It's the whole iTunes thing. And I guess they're going to change the name, but whatever. The point is... We would love your support. And the way to do that is actually go in there.
And writing reviews on
iTunes.
And
write a review. And that really helps us.
Yes. So we can keep delivering great content for you.
Yes. Bingo. Yay.
Yay.
All right. Till next time, which will be soon. Bye.
Bye, Lauren.
Bye.
The Consciousness Salon is owned, operated, and produced by Alana Roche and Dr. Lauren. Music is produced by DJ Roche and edited by Tyler Hood.
We would love to hear from you. There are a number of ways to contact us. My website is www.drlaurencostine.com. That is DrLaurenCostine. And I have a Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram page.
You can reach me at www.alanaroshay.com. That's AlanaRoshay. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter as well. This podcast represents the opinions of Dr. Lauren Costine and Alana Roche and their guests on the show. The content here should not be taken as medical advice. It is for informational purposes only, and because each person is so unique, please consult your healthcare professional for any medical or mental health questions. Thank you.